You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Philip Smith, the president and founder of the National African American Gun Association. Philip, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to talk to you today.
Me too, Philip. Thank you. Philip, I saw an article online, and that was the reason that I contacted you. Trump's victory has fearful minorities buying up guns. And this was NBC News. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are, the organization, and how it began?
Born and raised in California, bred and buttered. I'm a California kid. Attended University of California, Davis, and like most graduates, wanted to go out and do great things in the world, and I was very successful out in California as an HR consultant, worked down in Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and in 2002, my wife and I at the time, we made a really big decision to come down to Atlanta, Georgia, and when that happened, that literally put me in a totally different culture, a different perspective in terms of how to live the American dream. California is a very, I'm not going to say anti-gun state, but they make it really tough for you to purchase a gun. Whereas in Georgia, there's a very pro-gun atmosphere. There's a lineage in terms of families that have had guns for years. Grandfathers, fathers, sons, daughters, mothers, grandmothers. They literally, when they have gatherings, they go shooting together, competitive gun venues. So it's a totally different culture. And when I was dipped into that culture, I literally got the bug. I went to the gun range for the first time with a couple of co-workers. And they said, hey, Phil, why don't you come to the range with us? I think you'll like that. I said, nah. I don't know. I may or may not. And they said, come on, man, why don't you just come? So they kind of twisted my arm and I went and I literally had a great time. And then they said, next week we're doing the same thing. I said, count me in. And I went again for the second time the second week. And I literally caught the bug, wanted to go there all the time. I liked the kind of folks that I was meeting, very intelligent, very forward-thinking individuals. And it really resonated with me. But the one thing I didn't see when I went there, I didn't see a lot of folks like myself. And I just kind of said, you know what? I think if I could have a lot of good fun here, I know other members of my community would love coming. So went ahead, did some more research, and then slowly but surely put together, I felt, with an informative website that would resonate with our community and also be open to other members of other communities to come and join us in terms of making progress in terms of firearms with the Black community. And that's what happened. And launched the website officially in February 28th of 2015 in memory of Black History Month. And then it went from just myself to about over 14,000 people and growing very, very fast.
Wow, that's huge. 14,000.
Yeah, and literally no advertising, just strictly word of mouth. Obviously, I've done a couple of interviews here and there that have helped the exposure, but it's just literally word of mouth. And I think which really kind of validates what I've done thus far. By no means is the website perfect. It has a lot of inconsistencies in terms of the polish. Being a non-technical person that I am that has put it together, I think it does the core job, and the core job is to let people that are interested in the African-American plight in terms of firearms, have them take a look at how we see things from our perspective and join us and hopefully move forward with firearms being exposed correctly in our community. Because I think too long we have had guns in our homes, get it down to by grandfather or father or something like that, but we have not practiced using the gun correctly, learning how to shoot, how to really hold the gun, what caliber is best for you, what type of gun is best for you based on your size and your strength, female versus male. So we go over all those typical things in our meetings and some of our newsletters and kind of educate our community, because quite frankly, our community is a little bit behind the ball when it comes to knowing about firearms versus other communities that are out there. So we're trying to catch up and have a good understanding of a gun and what it can and cannot do.
Right. And of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact that Blacks, African Americans, whatever term you want to use, were prohibited to own firearms in the United States. Isn't that true?
Correct. And then you make a great point. And if you look on the website, doing the research, I found that this is an educating process for myself as well, that initially African-Americans or Blacks, whatever the term you want to use, when it came to the U.S., we really weren't allowed to have guns first and foremost as a slave. And from a period of slavery, went into what I call the Black Codes, where even though you might have the legal ability to be considered a citizen, everything was done against that particular community not to have a gun. And in some cases, as slaves, if you were caught with a gun or any type of weapon, that particular citizen was allowed to shoot you on sight. No questions asked, no repercussions for that particular slave being shot. So there's been a long history of not being able to have access to guns in our community. And that mindset from Jim Crow through the 60s, even to now, is kind of resonating. But it's slowly layers of onions being pulled down where we are now starting to see majority of African Americans now believing that a gun is a good thing. I'll give you a quick statistic. I'm a big analytics guy.
Great.
Back in 2012, the Pew Research did a survey, and 22% of African-American households thought of having a gun within the home was a great idea. It was a value add, quote-unquote, within your home. Now, fast forward, just 4 years later, there's been a tremendous pivot, nationally we're speaking, that now 52% of African-Americans in those same homes now feel that a gun is a value add and a good thing. So there's been a tremendous change in our community in a very, very short period of time due to the social changes, due to the realities of terrorism. And that's a big fear. I don't want to understate that. A lot of folks, black or white, particularly in our community, they're scared of actual terrorism coming over here from what we see in the Middle East. So that has driven that along with your typical crime to saying, you know what, we haven't had a gun thus far in our home, but let's go ahead and purchase a gun just to make sure. If something happens, we're going to be prepared. God willing that it doesn't happen, but I'd rather have the gun here and be able to protect myself somewhere to break in or any type of terrorist act, such as the San Bernardino. So let's go as a family and go out and purchase a gun. So we're seeing a lot of that activity. When I've talked to a lot of gun range owners, they're seeing a lot of African Americans coming now to purchase guns for the first time in many cases and getting those guns to be able to use them in a very proficient manner. So there's a lot of factors driving that, but it's definitely something that's visible based on what I've heard and seen at the gun ranges and the emails that I get.
Right. And of course, that saying, I'd rather have it and not need it than not have it and need it.
Right. Rather than that it needs it and not have it. Right.
And I always say that, and I'm a gun owner myself, that like you said, God forbid you would have to use it. You never want to use it, but just in case.
Yeah, the goal is never to have to use it.
Right.
Obviously, nobody wants to go out and take a life, but if someone's coming in your window, and this is something I always start my meetings off with locally, because I'm also the president of a local chapter here in Atlanta. I always say, if someone were to break in your home tonight at 2:30 a.m., and God forbid you're sitting there with your wife and your kid and you're sound asleep and you need to protect them. At that time, you have two large gentlemen coming down the hall, regardless of color. They're coming to kill, rape, and to burglarize your home. What would you do? And obviously, having a gun gives you a chance. It doesn't guarantee you anything, but at least gives you a fighting chance with your wife and kids to at least put up some kind of stance to protect yourself. And that's the heart and the core of our organization. Protect your family, protect yourself. If you want to go ahead and conceal carry or open carry outside of your home, that's great. I think that's a personal decision. But at least at the core foundation of the organization, have a gun in the home that will, in fact, protect your home. And know how to protect your home. If someone breaks in, have an organized plan of where to go, what to do, and have that plan also put into your kid's head also in terms of practice and knowing what to do under duress.
And your organization actually teaches folks about that as well.
Yeah, I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia, in the Bass Reeves Gun Club, which I'm the president of. We have monthly meetings and get-togethers where we go over basic core foundations, fundamentals in terms of how to hold a gun, what to do. We also have guest speakers, members of law enforcement, military that come in. On a national level, we send out an email monthly that has information about basic core fundamentals in terms of self-defense, concealed carry, all that good stuff that helps our members. Now, obviously, if you're living in Nebraska or Washington or California, you're not privy to the meetings that we have here, but what we try to do is to link you with other members or a good range or someone who's an NRA certified instructor or any type of certified instructor that can help you with the core foundations of being able to protect yourself. So the key, and I want to really stress this, and I think I get this from working in Silicon Valley, is information. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to do here is to get the information out to anyone that is African-American that really doesn't know about guns or is a little fearful of going into the gun range because it can be overwhelming the first time if you're not comfortable, to give them snippets of information to get their confidence, to get their information up, so when they do walk into a gun range, they have at least a little bit of information that they can work with or have a verbiage that they can talk to that they feel comfortable with. So that's the core. We're really trying to get information out to the members on a consistent basis on a monthly newsletter.
Okay. On your website, now I don't know if this is accurate right now because, as you pointed out, the numbers are changing, if we are to believe the polls, and that goes with all polls, but it says here, presently 19% of African Americans nationwide own firearms. Is that, you
correct,
think that's still accurate?
I'll be honest, I think it's a little under the actual numbers right now, but I would say it would be closer to 25%, 22% in terms of how many African Americans have guns in the home as of today.
Okay, gotcha. And of course, your organization isn't just for blacks. Whites are in it as well, isn't that right?
Most definitely. We have a very, very diverse membership, and I'll give you some numbers. About 10% of our membership are whites. We do not discriminate. I don't allow that type of mindset. We have literally a rainbow of different types of folks. We have Republicans, Democrats, gay, straight, libertarians, Tea Party members. We have a really good mix of folks. I'm quite honest with you. I think my most active members are our white members, which is a good thing because it validates that your message resonates beyond just your community and it has validity to everyone. And it's very simply what our people train. Our newsletters are very, very pragmatic. They give out good information for not only African Americans, but anyone. What kind of gun, a good gun to buy under $200? $150. Well, we recommend the PT Tours 111. Just good information, and that solid information resonates regardless of your color. So we welcome any and everybody. We're not an organization that is politically based. Do we have political conversations? Absolutely. Do we talk about tough questions? Should black men carry? Should black women carry? Black on black crime? We talk about those issues, and we put it on the table, and we try to have a very objective discussion via email or through the newsletter. So we welcome the diversity. I think that's my most proud point as the president and founder, that we do have a very, very diverse group of folks. And I've been able to meet some really outstanding white, black, Asian, Latino members nationwide. So that's something I'm very, very proud of.
That's excellent. Let's fast forward here to the present. There is something going on out there with the election, with the popularity, with the resurgence of, let's say, nationalism with Trump. What have you noticed as far as how it relates to your organization?
I think I've been blessed and cursed in being in a very unusual position that I can see a lot of activity and get direct conversations with a lot of members, white and black, nationwide on a daily basis, and I do. I would be lying to you if I said I did not have tons of emails on a daily basis since the election cycle has kind of ramped up. And I'm a political junkie. I love politics. I voted Republican. I voted Democrat. I'm totally conservative, independent conservative. I vote for some Democrat candidates. I voted for some Republican candidates. This depends on who I'm talking to or talking about and what they're delivering. So with that said, I have still been able to see a wide range of fear from everybody. There's just a lot of apprehension in the air. And I think it's just a lot of misinformation that people need to really kind of take a step back, take a breather, know that the stormtroopers aren't going to come busting down your door. Are there some activities going out there that are kind of scary? Absolutely. There are some groups out there that really have ill will for our community, I think, and we need to be diligent about watching them. I think the mindset right now is people need to take a step back, because if we don't take a step back, the country is going to be torn at the threads. And I think that's really, really dangerous. Ultimately, if a new president-elect, if you vote for him or not, we all need to give him a chance to do the right thing.
Right. Have you seen an uptick in interest in your organization?
I'll give you an example. This last week, we had 1,500 people sign up for our organization in 1 week. For us, that's a lot of folks. A lot of the conversations that I've gotten from a lot of our members, they are scared. They are concerned about the racial tension that's out there. Now, what we do with that tension or that dilemma is going to be up to us as a community, both black and white. And I think we need to have ongoing discussions that really alleviate the fear, that are fair-minded and balanced. Because everybody has a different perspective. Everybody thinks they're right. Everyone thinks their unique experience is the sole truth of how we are as a people. So you have to have discussions. And sometimes those discussions can be very raw. They can be very tough. I'm not going to say it's going to be pretty, but you have to sit back and allow other folks give their view and you be able to give your view. And it has to be respected. You don't have to like it. You don't have to like the other American that's talking, but you have to open your ears and you have to be fair-minded.
Right. And that's probably the toughest part for most people, I think.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. Because let's be honest, I'm an African-American male. I'm proud of who I am. I love myself. I look in the mirror every day. And according to my wife, I'm too vain, but that's another issue. There are some unique opportunities for us to do, but it takes some bravery. It takes some vulnerability as a community, as a country, to do it. You have to be bold in your actions. You can't sit back and say, woe is us, woe is me, the country's going to the whatever, just let things happen. Great men meet great challenges, and now this is a time for men and women to say, you know what, there's some tension out there as a community, as a country, let's sit down and face it, be honest about it, and move forward. Because if you don't have the honest conversations, then everything is all for naught. That means let's talk about some of the police shootings. Let's talk about some of the crime that's happening in the cities. Let's talk about Trump and some of the things that he's done. Let's talk about some of the things that people on the left have done. Let's be honest in what has and has not happened. And I think that'll be the initial steps to coming to some type of recovery, because there is a high level of fear right now within our community. I get emails every day from folks that just really feel that something bad is about to happen. This needs to be addressed. But we have to do it on both sides. There's no use getting a whole bunch of people that think just like you, just talking and talking is kind of raising the fear level, where you should sit down with people that you don't have a necessary commonality and talk to them about your fears, and they can talk to you about their fears. But we can't sit in our own little corners, our own little private neighborhood clubs, and say, oh, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, let everybody grab guns. Because bottom line, if everyone grabs a gun and starts going around shooting each other, the U.S. is going to be tore up. And I said this earlier in an earlier interview, if we don't come together, and I really mean this, as a country, regardless of color, we're going to be in a bad spot. And I mean this with all my heart of hearts. Because beyond just our country working things out, there's other countries looking at us and saying, okay, now's a good time we can attack America. They're at the worst. They're not really watching us. That's my big fear. The terrorism that is possibly coming into the country that's looking at the U.S. as a possible target. So I think we need to be a little more diligent in looking at the bigger issue and coming together as Americans and really understanding that we have a lot of more things in common versus what we don't have in common. Most of us love our family. Most of us love our job. We like being productive. We love the country that we're blessed to be in. Those are the kind of themes that we should kind of latch onto together, as opposed to saying, you know what, he's black or she's white. They believe this or they believe that. He's Republican or she's Democrat or he's Libertarian or she's Tea Party. All these differences. All that means that y'all have different views on how to vote. But we're still Americans. Let's not forget that.
Sometimes that's hard to stay focused on.
Yeah, it is. We're normal human beings. We have emotions. We've got pride. But you have to kind of take a step back and look at the bigger picture. What's really important here? I think the country is the most important thing that we live in. I have children. I want my kids and my kids' kids to be safe. And the way to do that is to come together as a community of American citizens and work a possible solution. Because right now, the tension's high. And I'm a very proud African-American man. I love my community. I would not want to be anybody else or anything else. And I see the fear, and it concerns me that it's so deeply acute. But it is. And I see some of the activities that have taken place on both sides. It's got me really concerned at a core level. So hopefully, we can come together. I'm going to give President-elect Trump a chance, as I think we should do it. President comes in to see if he can do the things that he said he can do in terms of making America great again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Right. You mentioned the tension. What do you think the main reason is that it's there? Because blacks and whites kind of live in separate spheres, separate worlds, and they don't really mingle as much.
I'll give you my example. I was born and raised in a little town called Vallejo, California. I lived on what is called the south side of town, the typical black community. My reality was very different from a lot of my friends, and I was blessed that my parents scraped their pennies together to put me in a very, very good private school and the best in the country. So I saw literally two different worlds, and I think that kind of resonates in myself as an adult because I'm able to see both discussions. When I came home to my neighborhood, which I'm proudly from, our interactions with certain law enforcement officers was totally different when I was on the other side of town with some of my private school student friends. So I understand the reality. There is a difference. Different things happen. A lot of times in the minority communities, you have white officers that don't understand what's going on, don't know how to relate, don't know the conversations that need to take place to kind of de-escalate a situation. And that is something that takes place. And I think that type of reality is definitely prevalent in today's society. You have different experiences. There is a difference in terms of the experience of different people. And that experience, because we're all a product of our experience, will give you a certain mindset. If you're from the burbs, black or white, and you have a lot of money or middle class, your experience is going to be totally different from somebody from the quote-unquote or the barrio because you have had a different kind of economic and social reality placed on you. So as an adult, you're going to have a different view. I think those different views are becoming more and more acute. There's a defined line now because if you're from the hood, your experience is this. If you're from the burbs, your experience is this. So that's why you have, I'm not going to say two Americas, you have Americans with different views that are now working right alongside each other at work, but when they go home, they have different worlds in which they live in. And that really forms their mindset, how they view government, how they view law enforcement, how they view whites, or how they view black. And that's unfortunate, but that's just telling it like it is. It's based on what I have been through in my life.
Right. So primarily, it's the economy, stupid.
I think a lot of times everything is economically driven. In other words, if everyone has a great job, if everyone has a nice home or a decent home, if everybody has a nice car, they can feed their children, they can clothe their children, they can give their wife a nice gift at Christmas, and you know, everything is really stable, the tensions or quote-unquote racial tension, I think, would go down dramatically. But we do have shortages of resources and qualified educated teachers in certain areas. Those things will continue to happen. So,
do you think there's a shimmer of hope?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. America is very, very resilient. I mean, come on now. We're the most resilient country in the world. I think with good planning, honest discussions, and a really, call it a community plan nationwide where we all come together and start talking and hashing things out and really doing something about that. If you see somebody, a white person doing something bad, call them on it. If you see somebody who's a black person doing something bad, call them on it. It takes bravery. It takes a little courage to do that when you're in your own community and you're calling out someone for being a certain way. And that's what I think the country is really lacking now, kind of like a moral base in which you just don't tolerate certain activities. I know when I was coming up, certain things you just didn't do, regardless of your color. If you could walk downtown and you saw a kid, black or white, picking on an older person, everyone would call him on that. And they would take him to the side and whip him up a little bit and say, look, you just don't do those type of things to older folks. Or if you see a kid that's playing hooky, when I was coming up, the neighborhood stopped him, whipped him. And when he got home, he got whipped again. Totally different. And I'm not trying to go totally old school here, medieval terms, but there was a moral expectation of your beliefs and your activities and what you can't and can't do, particularly with kids. So I think we need to go back to that a little bit, where as adults, if you see someone doing something that is not acceptable, and that person thinking that just because they're within their own color code or color group of people that look like them and talk like them, they can say certain things that are bad, that they can get away with it. We need to start calling those folks black and white. And I think that'll be the first step to saying, you know what, I can't talk like this, and I certainly can't do this, so I'm going to have to act like a good person. And I think that's what we need to go back to a little bit.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, that point was brought home with the death of Florence Henderson, the mom on the Brady Bunch. When you look at that television show, The Brady Bunch, and you compare it to the garbage that's on the Idiot Box today, it pretty much sums up exactly what you were saying.
It's funny you said that, Idiot Box. When I was coming up, my parents didn't, especially my mom, did not let us watch a lot of TV. She thought it was a waste of time. She was really a big advocate of us reading, all five of us. And, you know, we weren't rich by any stretch of imagination. We're just your average black family. But when you have a good moral base within the family structure, it kind of bleeds out into everything else, including firearms. So that's important. You have to have some foundation, some things that are acceptable and some things that are not acceptable. And I think we kind of lost that right now as a country, where everything goes, and I'm not going to get into that too much, but we need to have some level of, I guess, normality, for lack of a better word, that'll definitely bring that home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You said you've been contacted, and what was that, over the past month you had 1,000 people?
Past week.
Okay. Wow.
Past week we've had 1,400 people sign up, 90% African American. It's one thing I really pride the organization. We have got a world-class database of African-American gun owners. So when someone joins, I know what color they are, what part of the country they're in, what city they're in, what zip code they're in, what time they joined, and I can look by their name typically and find out what their gender is. So we really can hone in on exactly the trend of the moment. And in the last 7 days, we've had 1,400 people join. And a lot of that is, I would say, is being driven by the concern of safety, security, terrorism. Obviously, the racial tension has something to do with it, because a lot of folks right now, as I said before, in the earlier part of our discussion, they really just don't know what's going to happen. And that's a scary statement coming from an American, regardless of color, because typically this country has been rock solid. The one thing you know about America, you can walk out and feel relatively safe in most cities, most areas. But for you to be living in the suburbs, even in an upper middle class area, and you to say, you know, I just don't know. I don't know. I just don't feel safe. That says a lot for the state of the country. And unfortunately, that's the state of a lot of people's mindsets right now. And obviously, a lot of people join our organization. Yes, they are. But I would hate to think that that fear will be the long-term reason why they're joining our organization. I hope that they want to learn about firearms for the right reason. And that's kind of a sad note in all this, that the fear, black and white, everybody's looking at everyone saying, you know, something's going to happen. I can feel it. And I get email after email after email, and that is the theme of the day. But there is a lot of fear. I've talked to a couple of gun range owners, black and white, who have said their activity from a visual standpoint up tremendously. They're scared, so they're buying guns. Now, hopefully that'll change the reason why you're buying a gun.
Right.
So that's the point I want to make.
Even though it's good for business. What's the actual average weekly compared to the 1,400 that you've experienced?
When we first started, I thought I might get 300 or 400 people for the year. That literally jumped. I was getting 300 people a week. Now it's really up there. I'd say on the average, we probably get 500 people, 600 people in 1 week joining.
That's big. That's huge.
We're doing pretty good for lack of advertisement, just word of mouth and a lot of Facebook exposure, Instagram, Twitter. That has really been driving the introduction of our organization to our community. So we've been blessed in that regard. But as I said before, there's been a definite uptick in activity leading up to this week, where people are just joining. And I'm getting a lot of emails saying, hey, Phil, I want to join. Another thing I really want to point out that I'm very proud of is that we're getting chapters now. Just had a chapter in Los Angeles just starting 2 weeks ago. They already have 25 people. We have a chapter in Ohio led by two ex-policemen, African-American, that they have a focus of helping the youth and women learn about firearms. They're doing really well. We have another chapter that's being started in Tampa, I believe. So we're getting chapters now, which means that not only is the message going out in terms of a newsletter, but people are now starting to attach their next step with the organization locally, which is means that you're doing really well with the messaging. So people are now saying, okay, we have a NAG chapter here. Let's start a NAG chapter here. Phil, I want to start a NAG chapter here. We have a lot of certified gun instructors that are saying, you know what, Bill, I want to start a chapter here. I just had an email last night about 12 a.m. from a African-American firearms instructor in Chicago. Said, Phil, I want to start a Chicago chapter. These are my credentials. We don't allow anyone coming in who doesn't really have a base of information in terms of knowledge. Here's, I'm a firearm instructor. I've had this many years. I want to start a Chicago chapter. I can get at least 30 people within the next month. I said, sure. We start that discussion, and hopefully they'll have a large chapter as well. But we're growing like tentacles, but in a very positive way. So that's something I'm very, very proud of.
Yeah, you should be. This is phenomenal. So basically, you've had a jump of like 3 times the norm.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the chapters. I'm glad you brought that up. So right now, how many chapters are there total?
Forgive me, in my old age, because I'm 57 here, I don't have my cheat sheet, but I'd say probably 6 chapters, and we have about, I'd say, 15 interest groups coming online. An interest group is pretty much a group of folks that I've been communicating with and getting emails back and forth saying, Phil, we want to start a chapter. And I say, okay, before we can start the chapter, these are the things that you need to do. And I'll send them a document which outlines, you know, the steps they need to take. And when they're ready, they'll say, okay, we're ready to start. They'll give me their name, their president, how they're structured. I give them our bylaws, what they can and cannot do. And then they'll go ahead and be an officially chartered organization. So we have about 6 officially chartered chapters. And we have, I'd say, about anywhere from 10, maybe 15 interest groups coming down the pipeline where they are getting close to being a chapter. So I envision next year, this time, if we have a secondary conversation, that we would have 20, maybe 25 chapters nationwide. We do have members in every state within the U.S., from Connecticut to California, from Washington to Florida, Nebraska, South Dakota, you name it, we have a member in that particular state. The next step is to have the chapters, because the chapters validate the organization, I think, on a ground level. It's one thing to sitting up kind of an ivory tower, sending out these nice, beautiful newsletters that kind of outline what's going on, but the chapters are the guys that do the groundwork that really get the word out. So.
Yes, absolutely. That is a fact with all organizations such as this. The chapters do the work, and the national organizations usually get the kudos, not you.
Right, you're probably working
your butt off now. Have you dedicated yourself full-time now to this? Or
my wife would get on the phone now, she'd probably start screaming. This is a hobby that has went ballistic. And I'll be very honest with you, I had no idea that it would get to this point. I thought when I started the website and the organization that I might get 200, 300 people, and that'll be the most of it. Something I'd do on the weekends, and I would just kind of need bits of information here and there. But it has just mushroomed into this huge, fantastic organization where we are getting all types of communications from different types of people about guns and what they can do or want to do. And it's been just a beautiful process to watch, and I'm very surprised. And I also think the timing of the organization, due to the social realities that are happening now, it's coincidence. It was by luck that I started the organization, but I think it's coming in at a perfect time to address the needs of our community as it relates to firearms, because now they have some place to go to if they have a question about firearms where they can hopefully get a very legitimate and honest response. And we just don't talk about firearms, we talk about social issues. And when I do get those questions via email, hey, Phil, what about Trump? What about Hillary? What about Second Amendment? So I'm not for any type of background check. The questions go on and on and on, and it makes you really think before you respond to those questions that you really are touching people because they're thinking. When that thinking, the light goes on in the head, regardless of where your perspective is, that's a good thing, because it means you're really thinking about your actions and the consequences of those actions and who it's going to affect or not affect. And I think that's a good thing. Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes people are angry. But I think that's a kind of a cathartic release of emotions, and I think that could be healthy. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're doing a great thing, because there's nothing wrong with having people educated about firearms so they could, as you said, protect their family and protect their friends, whoever might need to be protected. Regardless of whether they're black or white or green or red or purple or pink, it doesn't matter. But what you have actually come upon is somewhat of a phenomenon here, that you are now risking the wrath of your wife as this organization, if this organization continues to grow, which it doesn't seem like there's a reason why it wouldn't continue to grow. And are you prepared for that potentiality, that it gets so out of control that it might put pressure on your family life?
That's funny you said that. My wife, she's very smart, a lot smarter than I am. And I've realized that over the years as a wise husband. And I say that with a smile on my face, all the people listening, but I've learned how to be very humble and to do what she tells me to do. But yeah, moving forward, if it gets to the point where, God willing, it's going to get that large, because we are trending in that way. Because when I started, I just thought it'd be a little mom and pop thing, but it's grown. I've tried to put together what I call best in class. I have an HR consulting background, particularly come from Silicon Valley. The one thing I've learned over the years, a lot of startups that I've worked with in the biotech and pharma areas, that you have to have a good foundation in terms of your structure as an organization. You have to have certain methodologies in place that when you grow organically, that your weakest link is actually your strongest. And that's what I've tried to do. So that's why I haven't jumped to do certain things in terms of advertising. I haven't jumped to have certain alliances, because I'm going to make sure that I am firm where I'm standing. I know exactly what the organization stands for, and that people know what the organization stands for from a branding or messaging standpoint. That's what we're doing right now. I'm making sure that as we move forward and grow, we grow correctly. There's no loose ends. There's no wild guys out there saying they're representing NAG and they're actually not. Being really diligent, making sure that everything is correct. That's one thing I really can't stand. An organization that's kind of loose-ended, everybody's just saying different things, the messaging is different. You talk to one person, you get one message. You talk to another person in another part of the country, you get a different messaging. I want to be kind of like McDonald's. You're in McDonald's in Connecticut and you're in McDonald's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know it's McDonald's. You know the French fries taste great. That's what I want for organization in terms of what we're doing, how we do it. You go to one chapter of NAG in Florida, you're going to get the same structure if you go to another NAG chapter in California or Atlanta where I'm at. So right now we're making sure the branding is consistent and everything flows very, very well. I'm not getting paid for this. Doing it as a hobby that has blown up. But eventually, hopefully, if it continues to go the way it's going, then I have to make some decisions in terms of, do I want to do this full time? Because you can't do this full time, or not do this full time if it continues to get as large as it's getting.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing what you've done, Philip. And that is, as you alluded to, one of the things that makes this country as great as it is. Things like this, what you have created, because you went to the gun range, you noticed that there were hardly any blacks there. And you wondered why that was. And you put this together over the course of those years, and it's gotten to the point where it is now. And I think it's an amazing thing. It's a testament to you. It's a testament to the country. It's a testament to the incredible spirit that is America, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, we're all Americans. Are we different types of Americans? Absolutely. Some of us are fat. Some of us are skinny. Some of us are rich. Some of us are poor. Some of us are dumb. Some of us are smart. And I think it pays to travel, to leave America sometimes to get an appreciation for where you live. Go to the Middle East. Go to South America. Go to Africa. And when you come back home, you'll be like, you know what? It's not so bad here after all. I can work with my neighbor who doesn't cut their grass. Or Billy across the street is not doing what the HOA is telling him what to do. So travel is important. I think you get appreciation for America. Are there tensions? Absolutely. And there will continue to be. But let's be fair-minded. Give your neighbor a benefit of the doubt. Sometimes you have a discussion. He or she might say something that is offensive. Better sometimes not to react. Try to educate that person. Use that as a teaching moment and move forward. And that's something I'm trying to do with our organization. Really be upstanding as we move forward. And people can kind of look to us and say, okay, these guys are doing the right thing the right way. And support them in their efforts. But we talk about stuff that's tough to talk about. And you may not want to hear. But at the end of the day, it's making America a healthier place to live for everyone. And that's what we're trying to do.
Right. We truly do have to give thanks for where we are right now, I think.
Absolutely.
In light of Thanksgiving just passing us by.
It is free to join. Right now, we're not going to have charging any type of membership until 2017, probably February or March. It's going to be $20 for the year, and everyone's welcome to join, regardless of color or political perspective. Please join and give us your input.
And what's the website, Philip?
It's www.naaga.co, and the acronym is NAG, N-A-A-G.
Thank you, Philip. Philip Smith, the president and founder of the National African American Gun Association. Philip, I want to thank you so much for coming on and educating the listeners with this very interesting and important topic, and looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
It's been great talking to you, and thank you for the time.